We have a little time left in the program, and so in honor of Father's Day, I'm going to play a piece I wrote some years ago as a remembrance of my own father, Mario Domandi. The piece was recorded by Judy Goldberg and has aired on Backroads Radio here on KSFR.
I was the apple of my father's eye. I shall never forget his kind face, his brown eyes, looking at me with tranquil love whenever I came into the room. He often said, "Here's looking at you, kid." And it wasn't until I was in college and he was dead that I realized that he hadn't made up those words for me. Mario was his name. He knew everything. When I was in high school, I used to sit around the living room trying to think of questions to which he didn't know the answer. I couldn't. Effortlessly, he could tell me about the history of Greece, Europe, and the Middle East. He could talk about philosophy from Aristotle through the 20th century Germans. All of this he did in a graceful and unpretentious manner. His knowledge came from the pure enjoyment of learning. He was born to be a professor. In fact, his colleagues and students couldn't believe that he came from a working-class family of Sicilian immigrants. His father owned a pants-stitching shop in Queens, which my father named when he was a boy, Imperial Pants. In his youth, he was skinny and popular, a regular Italian guy running around with his friends playing pool and handball. But he also sat at home studying. He learned German during World War II, when Germans were considered the evil enemy. By the time he finished college, he was fluent in German, Italian, Sicilian, and English. Later, he learned Yiddish and spoke it so well that once when he bought the Jewish Daily Forward at a newsstand, the Jewish man who sold it to him reprimanded him in Yiddish for being out on the Sabbath and refused to believe him when he said he was Italian. I remember seeing the Forward in a basket in the bathroom, stuck between Mad Magazine and the Renaissance Quarterly, all of which my father read with equal interest. As a child, I sat on his lap whenever I wanted to, and he never once pushed me off, told me he didn't have time. Nor did he make me go to bed when he had parties in the house, late loud gatherings of professors and students eating and drinking and singing. My father played the mandolin and the accordion, which he'd learned from his father, who'd been in a small band of Italians that played weddings and birthdays and anniversaries. He could play anything on the accordion, Never on Sunday, Amazing Grace, Mozart arias. And he played with an expression that I thought of as the daddy music face, a certain combination of concentration and delight that I never saw at any other time. Everyone adored him. They told him he looked like a cross between Cary Grant and Sean Connery. They laughed at his endless jokes, cried at his music, came to him for advice. This house, which everyone loved to visit, was full of oil paintings and oriental rugs and dark antique furniture, which my father had collected during the 1950s, when they weren't worth much, when everyone else was discovering the wonders of linoleum and brightly colored modern interiors. I spent my childhood playing liar's dice and racco, sitting on a finely upholstered European couch in front of a marble coffee table, eating on a 19th century Renaissance-style table with large-breasted angels, or were they gorgons, carved into its thick legs, running around between European paintings and prints, Chinese lamps with silk shades. The buying of these things did not come out of pretension any more than did his erudition, but rather from the same source, the love of beauty and culture. He never seemed to be anxious about anything, about his work, his students' papers, the book translations he was working on. I remember the rapid clicking of his electric typewriter in the study late at night after I went to bed. Not long ago, I got a call from a friend, a doctoral student, who told me about reading a book of philosophy translated from the German and marveling at how smoothly it read, since translations from the German are usually wordy and awkward. He turned to the title page and saw that my father had translated it. Despite his success in the largely WASP academic world of his time, my father always remained proud to be Italo-American, and he never stopped loving his Sicilian family. But they drove him crazy sometimes. His mother was a prima donna, a materialist who wore huge gold necklaces and diamond rings, and always needed to be the center of attention. His sister had wanted to be a model, but she was short and round and far too Italian for the 1950s, and she ended up marrying another Italian guy at 19 and becoming a secretary. Her husband Paul, who wasn't too bright, took over the pants shop when my grandfather retired and ran it into the ground. My father settling in the Hudson River Valley, 75 miles north of them, was, in retrospect, the only possible choice. He was still near enough to drive home for holidays, birthdays, and emergencies, But he was far enough that he could have his own life, his own friends, without their being around all the time, without his mother's imposing presence, his sister's endless chatter about nothing. For the family in Queens, our house was in the country, and it was a huge excursion to get there. They did so only once that I can remember, besides his funeral. When he started to die, it was unthinkable. No one could bear it, could believe it. Mario was too wonderful to die, too important, too good a friend to too many. He couldn't die. It was impossible. It mustn't happen. But no one could help. We sat helplessly watching as a cruel cancer shrank his body, dulled his voice to a whisper, slowed his mind. Nothing can erase the image from my mind of his sitting at the head of the table, hardly more than a skeleton, his huge eyes infinitely mournful and sweet, holding his head in his hands, trying to read the New York Times. He never got angry, never lashed out, never asked for anything we couldn't give. When he died, the world fell apart. Maybe every girl thinks her father is a great man. How can I explain to you that he actually was? I have proof. Everyone said it, not just me. Countless students of his, former students and current, were devastated, wrote me letters. One of his graduate school professors, a famous scholar at Columbia University, wrote immediately upon his death, saying that my father was the best student he'd ever had. The church at his funeral overflowed with people whom I could not see through the haze of tears and numbness. And he loved no one as much as me. Not my mother, even before the divorce. She was difficult and cool against his Latin warmth. Not his mother, though he loved her with the love of a good son. Perhaps his father, a gentle and kind man who would have liked to study in a university the way my father did. My grandfather died 6 months before my father, and it was obvious that he died in order not to witness the death of his son. But I thought my father would live. The operation was supposed to have been successful. The surgeons were ecstatic. When he decided to marry a second time, he called me on the phone. I was sitting in my dorm room, freshman year, alone on a dirty white plastic couch. He told me that although he was going to marry, I should know that I would always be numero uno. Numero uno. I tried not to let him hear that I was weeping. I think then I fully realized the fragility of his life, the hugeness of his love, and that it was all too late. What happens to that love when someone dies? His spirit is still with you, say the cliché spouting mourners, supporters, family, friends. You carry that love in your heart. No, the person is dead. His eyes are not there looking at me. His voice is not telling me about the history of Florence. He's not standing at the stove making spaghetti with meat sauce, not taking me to the supermarket and buying me whatever I want, Jiffy Pop, Milky Way bars, Barbie doll clothes. He's not there listening to stories about how hard it is to fit in at school, taking me on his lap and telling me that I'm better than those mean girls and don't worry about it. The spirit of love doesn't matter when a person is dead. It's the fact of being in the same room that matters. It's the accordion.
And that was a remembrance of my father, Mario Domandi, in honor of Father's Day.